Welcome to Straight Up Small Business, the podcast for startup and scaling up entrepreneurs who are ready to take their business to the next level of profit. I'm Beck Buchanan, an accountant turned virtual bookkeeping business owner. I'm super passionate about small business and helping entrepreneurs fall in love with their numbers in order to achieve their goals. If you ever feel confused, unsure, or overwhelmed about the financial side of your business, then you've come to the right place. This podcast covers bookkeeping, finance, and small business topics discussed in a straight-up way. My goal for each bite-sized episode is to inform and inspire you to make the next best decision in your business backed by financial know-how so you can create the business of your dreams. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss any of my latest episodes, and let's dive in. Before we kick off, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the Bundjalung Nation, whose country I am on while recording this episode. I respect their elders from the past, present, and those emerging as the traditional custodians of this beautiful land. So wherever you're listening to this today, I acknowledge the lands on which you are and those First Nations people who lived and worked there for over 70,000 years. Today on the podcast, I'm interviewing the fabulous Tanae Sanders, who is the founder of The Strategy Studio. Tanae is a former journalist turned marketing strategist with a small stint in floristry also while she was living overseas, who leads female-led businesses to effective marketing strategy. Tanae helps her creative clients to find their ideal clients so they can charge what their expertise is worth and ultimately run more profitable and sustainable businesses. She is pretty much the perfect guest for this podcast. In our conversation today, we hone in on a common problem entrepreneurs have, which is websites that don't convert to inquiries and sales. Tanae addresses the top three reasons websites don't work, and we also talk about the importance of email marketing and her best lessons since starting her own business 4 years ago, which, by the way, she describes the work she does as soul on fire work, which I love. Tanae is full of well put together and inspiring quotes, which she sprinkles throughout this interview. I loved talking to Tanae, and I'm sure you will love what was said between us. Let's dive in. Tanae, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's so wonderful to have you here today.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to chat. I'm really looking forward to it.
And it's amazing what we plan to talk about, just how fitting it is today, because I've actually spent 2 hours this morning on Zoom with my graphic designer and website builder talking about what my new website's going to look like, which should be out in the world in the next month. And what we had planned to talk about, which is, you know, the universe aligned it on today, is new websites and why they don't necessarily convert into inquiries.
Perfect timing. I'm glad I could be here on the right day.
So, and yeah, this might help me as I go along this process. So let me just set the scene here, because as I said, it's a really real scene for me right now. You've invested tons of money on branding and copywriting and design services, and probably lots of your own time directing and pulling it all together. It's probably taken months, and now the website is live and you're so proud of it. And you just think, wow, my business is going to go gangbusters now, but then crickets. You've got no inquiries, sorry. And yeah, it just isn't cutting through the way you thought it was going to. Why could this be? Can you tell us, please?
I can. Okay. The first answer I'm going to give you, it's that we put all of the effort on our website to get people to find out about our brand and our business. But the ultimate goal of our website is to convert someone from the point of landing on us to an inquiry or a paying client, depending on what our client process is. So quite often what happens is we sink all of this energy into our websites, it goes live, exactly what you said, and then crickets. But it's because we're not using our marketing as the ecosystem to build up that know, like, and trust bank with potential clients to then get them to click through to our website. So the problem is, if we try and expect everyone to go straight to our website and not having had those multiple touch points with us in other aspects of our marketing, it's a lot of pressure for our website to say all the things at once that makes them instantly want to have a connection with us. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. The people that are going to cold find you online aren't necessarily your ideal client because they're seeing you for the first time. You really want the people coming to you that are the ones that have got to know you via your podcast or via your Instagram, so that they're just doing a final checkpoint if they're ready to buy, rather than someone just looking for a virtual bookkeeper and wanting to pay $20 an hour.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And if your business model is around volume, then sure, like really going in hard on that SEO and Google Ads and all those things can work. But I think, especially for you and I, the types of clients that we work with, that's not necessarily the business models that we have. We're not after quantity, we're after quality. So if you have that website, it's not converting, the first thing I'll say to a client that comes to me and says, can you rewrite my website? It's not working. The first thing I'll say is stop. Let's go and look at the entire marketing ecosystem that's potentially driving people to your website. And let's get that right first before we tear down the beautifully built brand new thing that actually might be perfect. But now I'll answer your question and go specifically to the website. So let's assume you're doing all those other pieces perfectly. People are getting to your website. So it's not that you're not getting the traffic. It's that the traffic to the site isn't converting. That's when we can look at, okay, well, maybe what could we be doing better? The first thing I would say is there's kind of three core things that I focus on. But the first one would be you've made your website about you and not about your potential client. We get into this place of, oh, well, I need to show my expertise. I want people to know that they can know, like, and trust me. But sometimes we can take that too far. There is absolutely a point of our part of our website that needs to communicate our authority so people know that we have the expertise they need to solve their problem. But we also want to do that in a way that has empathy behind it. So it's not just all about us. It's showing us in a way that understands the pain point they're coming from and presenting ourselves as a solution to our client or customer's challenges or problems, rather than the whole site being about, here's me and this is what I do. It should be, here's me and this is how I serve. This is how I help. This is how I fix your challenges.
Yeah, a website is not a resume.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a constant process through all of marketing. And maybe we can talk a bit more about this later. But yeah, just really talking about your client's problem and your solution to it, and not yourself and your pretty photos and your branding shoot.
The second thing that I would say is that you might be confusing people with your messaging. And I think this is the point where sometimes working with a copywriter can add value to your business, because I am all for trying to DIY it and saving money where you can. And I regularly say to clients, give it a go, draft your email. Don't pay me to write it from scratch if you think you can get it 70, 80% there. But the benefit of having someone externally look at your website, whether that's a professional copywriter or even someone that's within your ideal client demographic, having them look at your website and seeing if they understand what you think you're saying. So we're experts in our field, and we can often get caught up in using language that is a little bit jargon based on what our experience is. And we forget that to our ideal client, they're coming to us because they don't understand any of that. And it becomes so second nature to us that it just slips into what we write. It's not that we're intentionally trying to sound complicated and fancy, but I always say you can be cute, you can be clever, but you have to be clear. And if people can't read it in a short, sharp, succinct way and understand what it is you do and how it helps them, they're never going to click that contact or book a call or inquire now button on our website. I guess that kind of leads me into the next one, which is we don't actually have a call to action. We don't tell people what it is we want them to do on our website. So I think especially as females, and I know you've talked about this before on the podcast, but we kind of shy away from the sell. We're great at the serve. Like, here's the information. How can I help? But the minute we have to, in inverted commas, ask for the sale, we like want to hide under a rock because it feels uncomfortable to us. It's a much more masculine energy thing to do to feel comfortable in that space. I always say you're doing a disservice if you don't let someone know what they have to do in order to benefit from your services. So when someone lands on your website, the first thing they should be able to get from your header is really quick, clear, succinct message that tells them what you do, how it helps them, and how they get it. Sure, we can look at our own websites and say, it's obvious, you just click this button here, but if that button is not in the top right-hand corner or under the headline on the header where our brains are expecting it to be, we too easily put it into that too hard basket. So those call to action buttons are such an easy way to ask for the sale without having to use the words, book me, buy now, or whatever the more salesy version of that might be. So telling people what you want them to do, how to get it, is so critical, and something I could say over 50% of websites that I go to won't have that really simple piece of information in there. Wow,
really?
Yeah. And I think in terms of like what that call to action is, often when I say 50% of websites might not have it, what I mean is they might have a contact button, but I think we forget that people often don't want to fill out a contact form. They want something that's more actionable than fill out a contact form. They want to download your price guide. They want to book an inquiry session. They want something that feels a bit more tangible and doesn't necessarily require them to wait, because we don't have patience anymore either. So the benefit of, if you can make it work in your business, if you have Calendly or Acuity or whatever it might be, if you can embed a book now, schedule an inquiry call option on your homepage of your website, you might actually find that leads to conversions a lot more, because people shy away from the contact form if they're looking for the low-hanging fruit. They want the quick, easy win. And booking something in your calendar doesn't require any effort on your part. You can set the time that's availability for them to book those sessions. You can have the automated email that they receive as a result of it. So you don't really need to do anything until you turn up for that call. But that simple action of having the request in there for them to act on might actually increase the inquiry rate you get from your website more than you think. You might think a contact form is fine, but it'd be an interesting experiment to try if you've always had a contact form, swap it out for a book now, book an inquiry session now, and see what happens.
I can actually speak from experience with that one. I used to have a book a session and I found it very stressful. Like, it was great in the beginning, but then I had so many people landing in my diary and I was like, oh, I don't have time for this meeting today. And so I've actually switched to an apply now form. So people, I guess it's not as rewarding for the client because they don't know if we're going to necessarily get back in time, though we really try within 48 hours. But yeah, it's still tangible and it's still saying, we're listening, we've got this, we're going to deal with it. But yeah, I did find the booking time in my diary was blowing up my week a little bit.
And I think you make such a great point there, because the way you approach this is very much based on what your goals are in your business. If you feel like you're just at capacity, that's when you might change it back to the contact form, right? If you're not getting the inquiries in the first place, that's when it might be worth trying. I 100% agree with you. And I have done the same thing. I've gone back and forth on having it because I get to the point where if I get an inquiry, I have to book 8 weeks in advance. And that doesn't feel like it's of service to anybody when I know people are looking for the instant answer. So yeah, that, I think that's such a great point, that it's based on where you're at in your business as to how effective that step can be for you.
I actually put my prices on our website probably over a year ago or even longer now, just as a bit of a qualifying position of like, if this is what we cost, there's no point coming through to a discovery call to tell, you know, us that you can't afford a bookkeeper.
Yeah.
It's a waste of everyone's time. So I've found that works well for us in terms of not getting contacts that can't afford bookkeeping fees. Would you say it's a good thing to have prices on websites in terms of the being clear and working out if you're a good fit for the person you're applying to work with?
Yeah, I've gone both ways and I can see the benefit of going both ways. If you want to qualify a lead and you don't have time to nurture the volume of inquiries coming through your doors or your inbox, so to speak, I 100% recommend having your pricing on your website. The one downside, and it's only a downside based on what you're trying to achieve in your business, but it's that you potentially miss the opportunity to nurture a lead into a better fit offer if you potentially have other services. So quite often on our websites, we might display our two core service offerings, but maybe there's other things we do as well, but we just don't want to confuse the message on our website. So whether it's the add-on sale or something that's like a little bit left of field, often you'll find the client that doesn't perfectly fit into the box for those two core services might be the perfect fit for something else. But if you don't get the inquiry with them, you never get to figure that out. But again, that comes down to a volume thing. If you don't have capacity and you really know I only need, let's say, 5 more clients for the next quarter or whatever it might be, I'd be doing everything possible to qualify those leads to make sure the ones I'm taking the time to invest my energy in, like time and mental energy as well, are people worth it? So if it feels uncomfortable to you to put your exact price, I often recommend people do a starting from price, especially if you're a type of business where there's like a scope, there's a range of work you could be fulfilling. It's not that it's a set price. It can be when it's a retainer type service, but I'm thinking someone that's like a wedding planner, for example, there's a huge scope of what your pricing could be, but you will know that there's a starting from price, and it's either starting from your service, or the flip side of that is you do investment starting from, and that could be the investment they need to make. So that's probably more specific to like a wedding type where you're not talking about your budget, you're talking about theirs. I can help clients who have a budget starting from this point. So that's kind of a slightly different qualifier of lead than giving them your pricing, if that makes sense.
What's the third reason that people aren't coming through as a result of your wonderful website?
I think it's that we're not being of service. And this is going a little bit back into the you've made it about yourself, not about them. But so much of the connection point that we want to make with a service provider is feeling like they care, especially in female businesses. I know that if I'm looking for a particular service provider, if I do a search, if I can't see a photo of them on their website, I don't mean this in a judgmental way, but I'm not going to book with them. And it's because I don't feel like I can make the connection to who I might be speaking to. I need to see the face, and then I need to read the language and the way they talk. And then I need to go over to their social media feeds, and I need to feel like I'm having an interaction with the same person. So in that not being of service enough, it's not being of service enough across all of the available platforms, right? It's not just about your website. So often, very similar to like what we started the conversation talking about, you've put all of this energy into this amazing new website, and then it feels like there's a massive disconnect between the website and the email marketing or the social media platform or whatever that other point of communication they have with you is. So the last thing you want is this amazing website that is really serving and giving all of this information and having them nodding and being like, yes, 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 and then reverse going to qualify you a little bit more in your social feeds and being like, is this the same business? Am I talking to the same person? That disconnect of they're not serving me in the same way can be really like a harsh jump in our mind when we're trying to decide if someone's the right fit for us.
I totally get that. And it's amazing. I know I keep talking about bookkeeping here, but
you're allowed
how
to.
how many bookkeeping businesses don't put photos of their team? And sometimes they're bookkeeping businesses that have allegedly won awards, like number one in such and such. And I'm like, who's even the bookkeeper here? Like,
yeah.
I guess I'm so honed in on my clients and they're all ideal. I'm like, I don't think any of my clients would have clicked on your website and signed up for your services. But obviously plenty of people are, and perhaps it's a price conversation. But I'm all about the photos and within reason in terms of getting the feel and the vibe for someone that you're going to trust with your money stuff or your copywriting or your website design. You want to know who that person is that's going to be serving you.
That's exactly what it is. And one of the pushback that I get on this topic often when I'm working with a client is it's just me and my website reads like I'm this whole team of people. This often is more common in the early stages of business where we might have a little bit of that imposter syndrome and we try to make our business sound bigger and more robust than it is in order to help build our authority. And there's no judgment on that. If that gives you the confidence to show up and lead your business in the way that you need to, then go for it. But don't also think that someone would think less of you if your business is just you.
I think there's a lot of empowerment at the moment, or pride and confidence around saying, I'm happy to earn like 60K and I work 3 days and I'm with my children every day. I think we're becoming braver with that. I think a year ago it was all about if you don't earn $1 million, don't show up. So I think people, I hope, are feeling more proud about being a one woman or one man show and not hiding away for just because they're solopreneurs, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think look at the types of professionals you want to interact with, right? I'm doubting they're the massive agency style businesses. You want to work with someone that resonates with the way you're doing business, right?
Absolutely. Obviously, websites are important, but do you need to get people to your website? Do you need to have a website? Or can you just sell off social media? Say, you know, say you're the solopreneur and it's like, I don't need a website. I've got Instagram or LinkedIn. Is that okay? Or should we just, you know, have the full suite of places people can find us?
Great question. I will say it's not okay to just have a social media platform. And the reason I say that is you don't own your social media followers. And if something was to happen through no fault of your own and all of a sudden your account got hacked or you got locked out of it or whatever, you've suddenly lost every potential opportunity to connect with a client. Mm. So even if you feel like I don't have the capacity to manage a blog, that's fine. Don't put a blog on your website. But can you at least have a one pager? That's all it needs to be. But a one pager, and I really, really encourage people to try and have an email list. Even if you're like, don't tell me I need to do another thing. I don't care if you only email them once every 2 months. You don't have to send the email to them every week if that's just beyond your capacity. But I'm all for trying to build ways into our businesses that we can continue to connect with clients or in the real estate that we own. So we own the people that sign up to our email list via our websites, or even if they join our email list from following a link in social media. And I don't mean own in a grubby, dirty, yucky way. I mean own in a, we have permission. And that's the one downside. There is so many huge benefits to social media. And it's amazing that now on Instagram, you can click a product and add it to cart and check out and never leave the app. Go all in on that if that's part of the way your business is structured and you have a physical product to buy, or even if it is book a service, but don't go all in on that to the extent that if it was to vanish tomorrow, you'd be left with nothing because you've put way too much energy into growing your business to risk it all on a platform that you don't own.
It probably took a year till I started an email list and I'm probably not doing enough with it, but I do feel confident I've at least got it. So anyone listening that doesn't have one, it's not that scary. Even I did it. And I do email every week about the podcast, but yeah, it is a big investment of time. But as you say, you don't need to email every week, just letting people know that you still exist. And hopefully in 2 months, you'll have something worth saying and you can say it then.
Yeah. And I would honestly say I'd rather you dropped a social platform and started an email list than had an extra social platform.
So with regards to the website, if it's not working, should you be tracking it via Google Analytics? I don't know if there's anything else, and I don't personally do this, but I'm just wondering, should we be tracking things like this to work out if people are abandoning, you know, or just looking at one page and none others? Is that part of a strategy or housekeeping that we should do?
Definitely. And I think that it depends on your website. If you have a Squarespace website, I know it does have some built-in analytics to it. If you can set up your Google Analytics, also good. But the things that are helpful to look at is there's also like heat maps you can install on your website, which shows you kind of like where people's cursor, like where their mouse goes. So you can see the movements that they're making. What are they clicking on? Like, where are the hot points on your website? And some really interesting insights have come up when I've done this exercise with clients. Obviously, you need it to be there a little while to get enough traffic for the data to be more than like a splash in the pan to something you can actually action. But often we might find that, for one client as an example, we had FAQs at the bottom of her homepage. And when we installed this heat map, we saw that everyone was clicking on these FAQs. Amazing that clients were still reading by the time they got to the bottom of the homepage, like they were still there. But it also showed us that maybe the main messaging in the homepage wasn't answering a lot of questions that people had. Mm-hmm. So we could then use that insight to go, okay, well, what else about the homepage message do we need? How can we refine our message a bit more? Or do we need to put our FAQs in the main navigation of the website? So I never say act on one solo piece of data that kind of is a bit of an outlier, but if it can continue to compound and keeps telling you the same thing, then yeah, absolutely act on it. So I think there's the analytics of how many people are coming to your website versus converting or clicking the button or doing the thing, but it's also when they're on there, what are they doing? What are they looking for? So I think, yes, there is different types of data you can act on. I also say go for the easy option of doing a poll on Instagram. When you go to a website, what are you looking for? Because your Instagram audience, within reason, hopefully your ideal clients. So rather than always doing the guessing game or hoping that you get enough traffic to your website to get enough data to help you to make the decision, we can do some quick polls or something in our social media and ask people, like, when you go to a website, do you prefer to click on the about page or the contact page? Are you looking for prices? How much information do you want about people's services? And do that frequently and start to like crowdsource that kind of information. So it's, yes, it's not as concrete data, but I'd say it's just as valuable if it's coming from your ideal clients.
Thank you so much, Tanae. Can we wrap up this beautiful marketing chat with either your choice, one more marketing tip? We've spoken about websites and the importance of email marketing. Perhaps there's another marketing tip you could give us, or just a business tip from your, you know, years running your own business that you feel called to share today.
Oh, thank you for asking. I would say the best investment that I have made since I've begun my business was to get to the point of being comfortable being vulnerable around other women in business. Showing up, being vulnerable and being okay to admit I didn't know the answers has just been so transformative, because all of a sudden other people tell you the answers or they say me too. Mm-hmm. And it can be such a lonely pursuit. Like, it's soul on fire work. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't. But I think that when we're willing to be vulnerable and admit that it's hard and ask for the help, there is just so much help out there, which is not the quick, easy answers that is all over Instagram about the do these five things and you'll make seven figures. Like, that's not what it actually takes to run a business. And the minute that I could let go of the imposter syndrome and just step into it and say, I need help with this, the amount of people that show up and lend their support to you and their experience and their guidance is just life-changing.
Oh, great tip, Tanae. Ask for help and be vulnerable. I'm practicing that as well. Thank you so much for this beautiful chat and such valuable lessons that I know everyone is going to appreciate hearing.
Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed having the conversation.
Thank you so much for listening in today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, I'd be so grateful if you left a review. And if you're not already, please connect with me on Instagram. My handle is straightup_bookkeeping. And if you'd like to know more about how I can help you be successful in running your small business, please check out my website, straightupbookkeeping.com.au, for details around my signature Bookkeeping in Zero course, Bookkeeping It Real, and also my done-for-you bookkeeping services. Thanks again, and see you next week.